Okay, I want to briefly explain what 5 for 5 is. So, as I mentioned, we're going to hear from 5 different people. The portion of scriptures that they have all been reading this week and last week, and sort of meditating on and asking God, is Genesis chapter 6 through Genesis chapter 11. So it's like, it's not like here's a few verses to reflect on. There's a lot in this. And so I'm really interested to see what God has been poking these guys at and what we're going to hear. So they're going to come up, share 5 minutes each, and we've done this a few times, and there's been a number of times where people have stood up and like 3 out of 5 have all said the same thing. And I've thought, this is awesome because we as a community need to hear something that many times, and the Spirit knows what we need to hear. So I want to say that to anyone who's teaching this morning or sharing. Don't be freaked out if the person in front of you shared exactly what you were going to say. I might need to hear that several times. Let me pray before you guys get up, and then I'll let them do their thing. Lord, thank you so much that you work through us and that your Spirit is alive among us, that we are your body and your body has many parts, and that we get to play part in that. Thank you that you speak to each of us and not just some priest or some person who has studied and got a degree in theology. Thank you that your Spirit is at work among us. And I pray that as a family, we would be listening to you as you're talking to us throughout the week. I pray for the 5 people who are going to be sharing this morning. I pray that they would be sharing your words and they would be speaking what it is that you've laid on them. I pray that as listeners, we would be having ears that are ready to hear, and that we would have softened hearts so that we can apply the things that you want to teach us this morning. So thank you that you speak through each of us in different ways, and thank you that your scriptures are alive and that they apply to so many areas of our lives, if not every area. It's a living word. So thank you for that, Lord. In your name, amen. So I'm going to ask Sam to come up first, and then they will just continue as Sam goes. Thank you.
Thank you. So yes, I did read, as Seth mentioned, Genesis 6 to 11. But I think for me, it wasn't something that overall hit me. It was a few verses that really impacted me. So 6 to 11 kind of starts with the story of Noah, and then finishes with the part just before Abraham comes into the picture. And it was in Genesis chapter 6 where I guess it starts off talking about how at that point God looked around and all he saw was that all human beings were just doing what was best in their own eyes, and in God's eyes that was so corrupt, and it hurt him, it really pained him to just see people essentially ignoring him and thinking that they can get away with whatever. But then they mention Noah, who is described as righteous, blameless, and walked with God, which is, I thought, the, you know, that walking with God was, you know, definitely a standout, and how cool would it be to, you know, be described as that in a midst of so much evil around him. Yet at the same time, how lonely would that have been for Noah to be really the only one described as that? And I think that's what kept sort of stirring my heart as I read the rest of the pages, is the fact that Noah building that ark would have experienced real extreme loneliness and isolation. He would have still had his family around him, but I can imagine he would have really experienced that feeling of loneliness, even though he was not alone walking with God. And there's a song that was really put on my heart yesterday that I'm going to sing to you guys in the last, hopefully, 5 minutes remaining. And feel free to encourage you that you or we are not alone, even though we may feel alone. So the lyrics will be on the screen, but feel free to just close your eyes and, yeah, my prayer is that it reaches not just your mind but your heart, that you are not alone. When I walk through deep waters, I know that you will be with me. When I'm standing in the fire, I will not be overcome. Through the valley of the shadow, I will not fear. I am not alone. I am not alone. You will go before me. You will never leave me. I am not alone. I am not alone. You will go before me. You will never leave me. In the midst of deep sorrow, I see a light is breaking through. Dark of night will not overtake me. I am pressing into you. Lord, you fight my every battle, and I will not fear. I am not alone. I am not alone. You will go before me. You will never leave me. I am not alone. I am not alone. You will go before me. You will never leave me. You amaze me, redeem me, and call me as your own. You amaze me, redeem me, and call me as your own. You amaze me, redeem me, and call me as your own. You amaze me, redeem me, and call me as your own. You're my strength, you're my defender. You're my refuge in the storm. Through these trials, you've always been faithful. You bring healing to my soul. I am not alone. I am not alone. You will go before me. You will never leave me. I am not alone. I am not alone. You will go before me. You will never leave me. I am not alone. I am not alone. You will go before me. You will never leave me. I am not alone. I am not alone. You will go before me. You will never leave me. Thank you.
That was really beautiful. People will be pleased to know that I'm not going to sing. out of all the books in the Bible, I'm probably most familiar with Genesis. I certainly read it more than any other book. You know, all those times I've set out to read the whole Bible, and I read Genesis. So, you know, I'm sure other people maybe have similar experiences. I didn't really think I'd have anything kind of new to say from this, but of course, my mistake was worrying about what I had to say instead of listening to what God had to say. It turns out, as Seth kind of touched on before, I'm often really slow to listen to what God has to say. He knows this, and so he uses multiple different angles to get my attention. I'm very thankful for his persistence. He's used this passage to reinforce something he's been teaching me, that I need to listen to him more, to wait on him. The Bible doesn't say how long it took Noah to build the ark. Maybe it was months, maybe years. But yeah, like Sam said, as the only righteous man on earth, he must have felt pretty alone. He received word from God to build an ark, and he got on with it. I've often been discontent with what God has me doing. I've tried to rush to the end. I've tried to push things along with my own efforts and wisdom. Most of us aren't quite like Noah, though. I don't know many people who have heard such specific instructions and promises from God. And I've often used this as an excuse not to listen to him or wait for his direction. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, and God, if you let me know I'm doing the wrong thing, you know, I'll probably listen and change. Or here's a list of the things I'll be doing this year, God. If you could just go ahead and bless that would be great. I've been learning this isn't quite what God wants. And the truth is that God has given us lots of promises in the Bible. And one in particular that I've been remembering comes from Ephesians 2:10. For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God has prepared in advance for us to do. Yeah, God has good works prepared for us, just like he did for Noah. This means two things. Firstly, I don't have to stress about finding good things to do. And secondly, I need to ask God what he's planned for me. The story of the flood is a story of sin, judgment, salvation. It's also a story of how Noah trusted in the God who loved and protected him. There was one phrase in particular that struck me anew this week. It comes from 7 verse 16, and it's, "Then the Lord shut him in." I just imagine the mad rush to get all the food and animals into the ark, for Noah and his family to get themselves into the ark in the midst of chaos. And once they were all in the safety of the ark, God, their loving Father, shut them in and kept them safe. We're told that it rained for 40 days, and that there were another 150 days of flooding after that. The next phrase that I think speaks really clearly of God's love for Noah is 8 verse 1, and it says, "God remembered Noah." And we can see Noah's heart really clearly, that he trusted in and relied on God totally. Once the waters were receding, Noah sent out a raven and then a dove, and finally God told them to come out of the ark. For me, this is a beautiful picture of what it looks like to follow God. We wait on God and we move when we've heard from him. I think the ravens and doves can be looked at in some ways as human understanding, things that make sense to us. They can be good, they can give us a picture of what's going on, but Noah didn't leave the ark even when the dove didn't return. We need to follow his example and wait to hear from God. It probably seemed to him a perfectly good time to leave, but it was almost another 2 months before God told him to leave. As far as we know, Noah just waited during this time. The timing might have seemed right from a human point of view, but it's important, yes, to wait for God's timing. At the end of chapter 8, God promised that we'd never again destroy all living creatures, and he made another promise to Noah and to all mankind that was kind of new to me, although I must have read it before. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. Following God goes against my kind of natural instincts. I've realized to my shame that I'm a doer, not a prayer, not a waiter, certainly not a listener. But Noah's story reminded me that God will protect and care for me. You know, that's God has shut me not into an ark, but into his son. Noah was shut up in that ark waiting on God for a long time before he received word that it was safe to emerge. We have a God who loves us, who has saved us from destruction, who won't forget us, who makes powerful promises and keeps them. Yeah, I need to remember this.
Hi, I'm Hamish. Hi. To start off with, I'd like to echo the first part of what Jason said, something that I think I've been convicted by through reading these passages is that it is really important how you read the Bible. I've come from a scientific background, and it's not that it's a barrier between my faith interpreting things critically and scientifically, but it is very easy for me to get caught up in a very intellectual analysis of things, but not so much listening to God. So that's something that I definitely have picked up on and need to work hard on. But that aside, there were some things that I read that stood out to me. I've got about 5 points for 5 minutes. And the first one was, you know, going through the 6 chapters. People lived for a long time back then. So, you know, it was about 900 years, I think it was, that how old Noah was when he built the ark. Correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, I was like, how exactly does that work? And I've done a fair bit of biology, and I couldn't help but think, I don't know if anyone knows about the enzyme telomerase, but basically in childhood and embryo development, there's this enzyme that extends and sticks blanks on the ends of your genes that allows for errors and in DNA replication. And basically that doesn't exist or isn't active during adulthood. And I couldn't help but think they had some hectic telomerase. But, you know, that was just an interesting point. But that being said, what interests me was, you know, why did God shorten their lives to, say, 100 years? Because he mentioned that he wanted to number their days as opposed to the almost immortality that they had back then. And I think it's sort of a bit of a reflection of how in the beginning they could eat from the tree of life, which Andrew pointed out to me earlier today, and that when mankind sinned, there was this brokenness that came, and although God still gifted this kingdom, this earth to mankind, it was fractured and imperfect all of a sudden. And what's interesting to me is that despite mankind's fallenness and sinfulness, God still gave it to Noah in that condition. And even with our decreased years and this and that, God still gave us the duty to look after it. That stood out to me. The other thing that stood out to me was that Noah was pronounced righteous before God. It was interesting, I thought, that this is before Moses, and he's calling Noah righteous before there was this written law or this law to go by. And I couldn't help but think, well, what conditions were there to, you know, pronounce him as righteous? And in my mind, it must have just been because of his faith and walking with God, as it said, which I think is an important point and that I hadn't considered in light of why God called Abraham righteous. I find it to be a really nice analogy of the flood and how God often destroys the old to make the new, in the same way he does with our bodies when we become Christians. And those are the things that stood out to me. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Catherine. Thanks, Hamish. I procrastinated real hard on this, and God was very gracious because he gave me something to say anyway. There's a really great YouTube channel called The Bible Project, which some of you might be familiar with, and they produce lots of theme-based videos and also videos that go through the books of the Bible. So there's one of them that goes through the theme of covenants in the Bible, and it lists about four of them that God makes in the New Testament. So a covenant is an agreement between God and his people. And most of them involve a promise from God, illustrated by his hand coming down, and then commitments from the people, and that's the covenant. But the one that God makes after the flood is different, because he promises to never destroy the earth by flood again. But there's no requirement for a commitment from the people, so it's just his hand reaching down. I wrote something, but it's missing a lot of middle, so I thought I would supplement it from the Noah and the flood story from Before I Go to Sleep. Bible stories, poems, and prayers for children. It features a lot of hedgehogs and kittens. But I'll skip over those parts. That's fine. The human heart imagination was terminal with oozing evil. Every generation exchanging the glory of image bearers for ever more gory choosings, now guilt wearers. Frozen in spiritless stagnation, bent in dynamic defiance, hearts hardened, arms folded and fighting. Their chosen destination far from the garden that you imagined. God was sad, but he was angry too. So he decided to bring a great flood upon the earth, but he wanted to save Noah and his family. You must build a huge wooden boat, God told him. You must make it long and wide and tall and paint it with tar so that the water can't get in. When it is finished, you must shut yourself inside with your family, and into it you must take a pair of all the animals in my creation, so when the flood has gone down, they can have young to fill the earth again. And as you can see, the elephant helps build the ark, as does the heron and the dog. Yet you held out your hand, your ark, to surf the storm, as your spirit had strode the waves, calling land into form. 7 days you waited, breath bated, anymore, and with your own hand you closed the door and opened the proverbial floodgates of your watery wrath. So to speak, you cleaned the slate, but saved a handful, not by their good, but by your grace, floating crate of reserved creation. It rained for 40 days without stopping once, and the whole earth turned into one enormous sea, filling the valleys and covering the mountaintops. Everything on earth was swept away and drowned, all except Noah and his family and his animals, snug and warm inside the enormous boat. The floodwaters boiled and bubbled and raged, but God did not forget Noah. And at last, he made a huge wind that blew across the earth, quelling the floods so that they began to go down. Mildly seasick, heavily heartsick, but very living cargo. Staggered to land, helped by your gentle hand, and you spread overhead your rainbow. Oh, picture. Rainbow. You are not unwise. You know that our hearts still delight in death. But now that same spirit that gave our nostrils breath in paradise can transform our freshly washed and thawing frozen forms. Rod of judgment bent into bright shield, encircling sword you swore to never wield again. And the story arc is closing, beginning to end. You have been our gracious great friend, still aching to extend worn arms in covenant, heartbreaking for us to turn defiant feet from squander lust, from idle trust, to wonder at your love for us, to run to your hand. And for now, the door to the ark stands open.
Good morning. What was that book called again? Before I Go to Sleep. Thank you very much. That's fantastic. So you're all asleep, so I'm going to hopefully wake you back up while we finish off with this 5 in 5. Discussion here is I've actually titled it, What Are We Building? And it's interesting listening to the other four people talk. They're talking about Noah, but I am the last person to speak. And at the end of 11, if we get to there, and I'll probably get you to read a little bit about it in a minute, it's all about the Tower of Babel. Or the question that I want to get you to interact with, because this is what I listen to and you have the app on your phone, is it Babel or Babel? Now, I know it's spelt differently, but the person that was speaking the text to me in my app used the word Babel. And if you know the story of the Tower of Babel that I knew as growing up in Sunday school, it was Babel. But then he's saying Babel, and I'm like, but Babel makes so much sense, because that's what God was doing to them. He's mucking up their language. So anyway, something for you to think about to start with. When Seth emailed, he said he wants us to think about something that's encouraged, challenged me. So here's the question, as I say again, what are you building? Okay. Let's go to chapter 11, verse 3. What it says, if you're not there yet, it's on page 15, right at the start. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks, bake them thoroughly. They used bricks instead of stone. New technology. Page 15, Genesis chapter 11. Brand new technology. No more stones, we're using bricks. Okay? I found this really fascinating. Bricks and mortar. Mortar. If you go into... And I'm not being too technical here. I find this stuff just fascinating when you actually read it and then you go, oh, that's really interesting. They used bricks instead of stone and tar for mortar. Mortar. Anyway, think about that one later. They had been making things that they've been able to do and for years with stone. And they've never used this before. It's new technology. It's bricks. So they're going to build this tower to the heavens. A lot of this, just to give you a little summary, just quickly, I've read a book just recently that gives a lot of this information, but I'm trying to put my little spin on it as well, but I found it really fascinating. So it's a bit of me and a bit of another author. So we've got this technology of bricks, but they've been using stones forever. So the stones have been part of civilization since Adam was a boy, if you want to say it like that. They're building with stones. These bricks are brand new. So what are the questions I've got? These bricks, they're amazing. Wow, look what we can do with these bricks. They make all kinds of things possible that weren't possible before. Just how big can we make something with these new bricks? They're probably the questions that these guys are asking at the time. But before we go into that in more detail, let's just go back a little bit. And can someone just read for me chapter 10, verse 8 to 10? It's not too long. It's a couple of big words, but there's no judgment here on how you pronounce them. Anyone? Thanks, Jason. Shinar, awesome. So Nimrod, ever heard of Nimrod before? Ever found out about this guy? Nimrod in Hebrew stands for rebel. So he's the king of the kingdom. He's the man, he's building an empire. He's a mighty warrior. He's building lots of cities. He's got a council that they occupy all the resources in the land. They produce things, they're self-sufficient society, and they don't need God. They're looking after themselves. That's why they're on track here with this new technology, and they're going to build a tower to the heavens. So it's run by leaders, and they're no longer dependent on the Lord. So the power, his empire, has this technology. They're setting themselves up as a god, and they're crushing everything and everyone in their way, pretty much. If you read some further text into it, it's quite fascinating and quite scary. At this time, they're spreading, scattering, and settling in all different types of places. And where Jason just said then, at the end of chapter 10, Shinar is where we're talking about in chapter 11. So it's quite fascinating that Nimrod's got this powerhouse of people, and they're building this tower. And it made me think, and this is where sort of the reading is about, you know, isn't it interesting what the world is like today? I don't think we've changed a lot. People are still building their powerhouses in all sorts of ways. And I ask myself, what am I building? That's why I say at the start, what are we building? What are we looking for to assist the world and help the world rather than building our own resources or our own wealth, our own popularity, whatever it might be? Let's look at corporations. Let's look at the wealth in the world. Countries, war, you know, the strong dominating the weak. You know, why are there so many poor people in the world where the West is so affluent? You know, these are questions that, you know, they go back to Genesis chapter 11. You know, I find it, as I say, I find it fascinating. If we go into back to chapter 11 and then near the end of 4, they pretty much say, so that we may make a name for ourselves. Nimrod and his guys, they're making a name for themselves. They're being strong, powerful occupiers. So I'll wind it up with this in relation to today. You know, we have tremendous power. Every single one of us sitting here, we have huge amount of power. We have tremendous abilities. We've got innovation. We've got creation. We can invent. We can build. You know, this was a brick, okay? This building, stone, brick, everything. You know, there's bricks, actually stones there. That's quite fascinating how it's set up. But what are we building? That's the question. If you think of Apple, I'm going old school because I've written, I haven't gone the technology, but if you think of technology in this day and age and what Apple are doing, say just in the last, I was listening to a podcast this week and they were talking about how they launched this online app, or no, even an app, it was just a business, I should say, prior to the launch of the iPhone. And that was like 10 or 12 years ago, 10 years, because it's the 10th year. And you think, oh my goodness, what has happened in 10 years with technology, just with one brand that is Apple, let alone Samsung and all the others, and then all the other crazy, awesome ideas that are good and bad out there. So the question is, we have tremendous capacity to use all of our energies, our mind, our power for good. We can invent, we can innovate, we can create, and we can just care for one another, because that's kind of what the gospel message is, and something, you know, I'm challenged about. So we started with Noah building an ark. We finish in 11 with them building a tower. And then I just ask, what are we going to build going forward?
Thanks, guys. I always feel weird. Like, I want to clap after someone talks, but then I'm like, are we allowed to do that? Thanks for sharing. It's really helpful. I'm always encouraged by how God uses the different ways that he's wired each of us. I mean, even the five that shared this morning, such a different way of looking at the world compared to each other. And we hear songs, we hear science, we hear poetry, we hear good questions, we hear humor, logical arguments. It's just all, I like that. Some things that I got out of this morning was that we're not alone, even though sometimes I might feel like it. The sense of us having to wait a long time is sometimes really healthy, many times very healthy and transforming. I like the point Hamish was saying about righteousness sort of being around before there was this written law, or before there was, you know, what were the guidelines? And the guideline was God called him righteous, and that's what it was. And that's, isn't that kind of cool? We're reminded that God makes this covenant or this promise, and it's that he is a friend. And I think he said from end to end or something like that in that poem, or it just rhymed, it sounded good. But it's so true. Like, the whole promise and covenant is friendship. It's a relational thing. Great reminder. And what a good way to end with a question. Like, what are we building? Really good question.